official K-1 podcast, K-1 Battlecast. You'll get news, fight reviews, and fighter interviews. And now, your hosts, Michael Shaverov and Jonathan Scheer.
It's good night, Iran!
Welcome back, everyone, to K-1 Battlecast, the official K-1 podcast, where we dive deep into the most thrilling moments in kickboxing history. I'm your host, Jonathan Scheer. Last week, we took an in-depth look at the explosive quarterfinal match between Mike Zambidis and Yuichiro Nagashima. Zambidis, as always, brought his powerhouse style into the ring, and we broke down every moment of that fight, from his ferocious hooks to the strategies that saw him through to victory. Now, if you miss it, it is episode 37, that's last week's show, and today we're going to continue this series, The Doctor Calls, focusing on Giorgio Petrosian's back-to-back K-1 World Max Championships. In this episode, we're going to dive into the second quarterfinal of 2010, which saw the 2002 K-1 World Max Champion, Albert Kraus, step into the ring against Petrosian. Now, this was a highly anticipated rematch, with Kraus determined to avenge his loss to Petrosian in 2009. But as we'll see, Petrosian had other plans. Despite a 5-fight winning streak, Albert Kraus entered the 2010 K-1 World Max quarterfinals with a heavy burden on his heart and mind, one that had perhaps been growing since his controversial loss to Buakaw in 2008. That fight, held at the World Max Final 16, was supposed to be another step towards reclaiming the title he had won back in 2002. But things didn't go as planned. Despite Buakaw clearly outpacing Kraus in the first three rounds, and if you haven't seen it, it's incredible the complete domination that Buakaw shows throughout the first three rounds. It's almost like Buakaw has Kraus on some kind of remote control, or there's a playbook that only Buakaw can read, and he simply dominates Kraus the full 9 minutes. But somehow, for what reason, I can't say, the fight was sent to an extra round. And here's where it gets crazy. In the extension round, it was Kraus who became the aggressor, pushing forward relentlessly and seemingly outpacing Buakaw and showing the heart of a champion that Kraus is known for. Yet, when the decision was announced, it wasn't Kraus's hand that was raised, it was Buakaw's, and it was one of the more shocking decision wins by any fighter that I've seen. If you're going to go to extra round and the other fighter wins it, you kind of got to give it to the other fight. So it was a bitter pill for Kraus to swallow, and he expressed visible frustration with the judging, storming out of the ring angrily. In Kraus's mind, and in many others, he had done enough in that extra round to secure the win, and the decision left him questioning the fairness of the sport, and that would fuel a fire that would burn through his training in the years to come. And at least in my mind, that lingering resentment stayed with Kraus for years to come. Whenever he would lose by decision, I would just see him shake his head as if to say, "Oh, okay, so you're gonna do this to me again, huh?" Well, fast forward to 2009, and Kraus faced another crushing loss, this time to Giorgio Petrosian, a fighter who seemingly came out of nowhere. Petrosian's calculating counterfighting style contrasted sharply with Kraus's aggressive, forward-moving tactics. And in their 2009 quarterfinal matchup, the skill of Petrosian's countergame left Kraus completely powerless to mount any significant offense. It was very similar in many ways to that 2008 loss in the difficulty that Kraus had dealing with that counterfighting style. Okay, so we are going to go into 2010 looking at this. Now, remember that Kraus is a fighter who thrives on pressure and aggression, and he wants to get into the range where his elite boxing skills can pummel his foes into submission. But Kraus, with this style of fighting, was almost entirely unable to land a single clean hit on Petrosian during their 2009 face-off. The Dutchman's punches were met either with a tight guard or deft head movement, and Petrosian slipped and countered with the precision that he's known for. At the end of the match, despite raising his hand in the air in a symbolic gesture of confidence, Kraus must have known deep down that he'd been outclassed because when the unanimous decision came in favor of Petrosian, Kraus bowed his head in acceptance, which was a stark contrast to the determined fighter who had entered the ring. In 2010, Kraus once again was forced to face off against Petrosian, and I'm not exactly sure what the process of the eight-man draw was, who chose who. I wasn't able to find that information, and if any of you have it, please send it my way, because I'd be interested to see why Petrosian chose Kraus or Kraus chose Petrosian. I'm not sure which way it went. But this quarterfinal was not just another fight. It was another chance for redemption for Kraus. It was another chance to prove to the world that he was the best. And Kraus had spent the entire year training, fueled by his intense desire to prove that the 2008 and 2009 quarterfinal losses were flukes, that he was still capable of standing atop the K1 world. His family, always a source of strength, was by his side, and Kraus was determined to show them that he could still be number one. He wasn't just fighting for himself, he was fighting to regain his honor, his pride, and the respect of his loved ones in his eyes. And he had come off of a 5-fight winning streak, winning against the likes of Kozo Takeda, Jan Mazur from the Czech Republic, William Diender from the Netherlands, and Tefik Suku from, I believe, Turkey, but fighting out of Poland. And Hiroki Nakajima was his final 16 qualification match fight, and he won by unanimous decision. Now, he was coming into this fight with 5 victories in a row, 3 by way of KO, so he had a bit of momentum on his side. Now, let's get into Petrosian. Petrosian, on the other hand, was known as the doctor for his surgical accuracy, and he had come onto the K1 World Max fighting scene when he had been a late replacement for John Wayne Parr in 2007 at a K1 Fighting Network show in Stockholm, Sweden, to face Buakaw for the WMC World Junior Middleweight title, and he fought the K1 Max champion to a draw. Although he wouldn't win the title, he put the world on notice. Petrosian's style was different from anything the K1 world had seen, a perfect blend of offense and defense, precision and timing. He didn't just fight, he dissected his opponents, analyzing their movements, predicting their attacks, and countering with surgical precision. In pre-fight interviews, Petrosian spoke about how he didn't really come into fights with a specific strategy. Instead, he adjusted to his opponent's style, reading their movements and countering accordingly. This adaptability made him a nightmare for aggressive fighters like Kraus, who relied on imposing their will on their opponents. Now, there was a hype video that talked about the two fighters and the anticipation that was leading up into this match. And as the rematch between Albert Kraus and Giorgio Petrosian loomed, the K1 community buzzed with anticipation. The official hype video, a crucial piece of promotional content leading up to the fight, featured insights and reflections from Petrosian himself, as well as Kraus, and other fighters who had faced Petrosian and their thoughts on this formidable opponent. Gago Drago was quick to acknowledge Petrosian's prowess, calling him the best in the business, and Andy Sauer, another legend in the sport, highlighted Petrosian's incredible skill at countering his opponents, noting that Petrosian has an uncanny ability to read his opponent's moves and react almost instantaneously. Sauer emphasized how Petrosian's counters weren't just for offense, but often led to scoring opportunities that turned the tide of a fight. Also in the video was Yoshihiro Sato, another person in the lineup for the 2010 finals. Sato is known for his technical fighting style, and he described Petrosian as a genius in the ring. Sato was particularly impressed by how Petrosian learned from his opponents throughout the fight, and he said if you hit him with something in the first round, he specifically referred to a middle kick, he said you don't expect it to land in the second round or later. Petrosian's adaptability and his ability to anticipate his opponent's next move made him very difficult to fight against. And perhaps the most telling endorsement came from Masato, a K1 legend and former champion himself. Masato openly admitted that Petrosian was the one fighter he least wanted to face in the ring. Now, coming from a competitor of Masato's caliber, this is high praise indeed, and it shows just how much respect Petrosian commanded within the sport. In an interview that Petrosian had within the hype video, he remarks, "I fight to avoid damage as much as possible," summarizing his approach in a way that has been reflected in his entire career. Unlike many fighters who rely on pure physicality, Petrosian emphasized the mental aspect of his training. His coach had instilled in him the importance of using his mind to stay one step ahead of his opponents rather than just training the body. Petrosian had been taught to anticipate his opponent's moves and to see the attack before it even happened. And although he kept the details vague, it was clear that Petrosian's success was as much about mental acuity as it was about physical skill. By the time of their first fight, Petrosian was on a 2-year, 17-fight winning streak. But by the time they met by their second fight, he was on a 3-year, 23-fight win streak. Impressive. It's a different level of momentum that was carrying Petrosian into his first and second fights. While Kraus had entered the 2009 fight confident in his abilities, Petrosian's defensive mastery had left him unable to mount any significant offense. And in the hype video, Kraus admitted that there was nothing he could do. One could only imagine that the fight must have been almost surreal, like trying to fight a ghost. And no matter what Kraus threw at Petrosian, the Italian-Armenian fighter was always a step ahead, just slipping out of range or countering with his telltale accuracy. Going into the 2010 rematch, Kraus was determined to rewrite the narrative. He spoke about how hard he had trained over the past year, driven by the desire to redeem himself and prove that he could overcome Petrosian. Despite the overwhelming odds and the psychological toll of the previous year's defeat, Kraus was resolute in his belief that he could turn the tables in 2010. "Giorgio's going to have to get through me if he wants to be the champion again," Kraus declared, signaling that he was ready for a war in the ring. All right, with this extensive preamble out of the way, the stage is set for the rematch that would test not only the physical skills of both fighters, but also their mental fortitude as well. Would Kraus's relentless aggression be enough to overcome the calm, calculated approach of Petrosian? Or would the Italian-Armenian fighter once again demonstrate why he was considered to be one of the best in the world? The answer awaited in the ring. The two fighters approached each other in the center of the ring for the final instructions, and the contrast between them was stark. Petrosian had a calm, very cool demeanor, and he kind of casually walked up to the center. But Kraus, on the other hand, was visibly tense, and he wouldn't even look at Petrosian. You know, it's hard to tell what was going on through his mind, but he'd been very vocal about how hard he had trained for this rematch, and you know that he had to have been driven by the desire to erase the memory of that defeat. And he wanted to prove to his family once again that he was the champion. But as Kraus stood across from Petrosian, he found himself unable to meet his opponent's gaze, and his eyes drifted to the canvas while Petrosian calmly surveyed every last doubt written on Kraus's downturned face. It was a brief moment, but one that suggested the psychological battle that had already begun before a single punch had landed. The bell rang to start the first round, and Kraus tried to set the pace early, attempting to impose his will on Petrosian and prove he wasn't the same fighter who had lost so completely in 2009. Kraus started out strong, throwing a few inside leg kicks. But Petrosian extended his right hand, not so much to jab or feint, but to act as a measure of distance, a tactic that has become a hallmark of his style, keeping Kraus at a distance that favored Petrosian, not Kraus. This subtle control of range was something Petrosian excels at, always ensuring that Petrosian's opponents fight at Petrosian's space, not their own. And despite his pre-fight statements to the contrary, that he was going to change things up, that he was going to do something different this year, Krauss found himself gradually drawn back into his old habits. He kept trying to close the distance with his boxing, but Petrosian was always a step ahead, using that lead right hand to corral Krauss, at times throwing check hooks, at times slipping to the side, and constantly putting Krauss in positions where the Dutch fighter was at a disadvantage. Petrosian's ability to manipulate Krauss's movement was masterful, turning Krauss's aggression into opportunities for counters. At about a minute and 45 seconds into the round, the dynamic between the two fighters became evident. Petrosian, having established his range early, started aiming his rear leg kicks at Krauss's back hip, a strike that Petrosian landed repeatedly throughout the round and constantly targeted Krauss's right side with middle kicks and low kicks as well as step-up knees. Each time Krauss attempted to retaliate, Petrosian countered the counters, either with step-up knees or a follow-up jab left cross combination that arrested Krauss's every attempt at offense. While Krauss did try to incorporate more kicks early on, true to Yoshihiro Sato's predictions, Petrosian adjusted to this change. Each time Krauss attempted an inside thigh kick off the back leg, Petrosian's front knee would swivel ever so slightly to check it, causing Krauss to absorb more damage instead of inflicting. And this likely played into Krauss's gradual decision to rely more on his boxing as the fight progressed. As the bell rang to close the round, Petrosian landed another back leg kick to Krauss's hip flexor, his timing as impeccable as ever. Back in their corners, there was also another contrast between the two fighters. While Petrosian was calm, breathing easily, showing little to no signs of distress, Krauss, on the other hand, was winded. His eyes, however, were intent, and he was listening to his corner, trying with all his might to find a way to adjust his strategy. Before going into the second round, the open scoring system was used at the time, and it confirmed what was apparent to most spectators, that the judges had all voted in favor of Petrosian. The first round belonged to the doctor at 10-9. The bell for the second round rang, and Krauss knew he had to make adjustments. Down on points and with Petrosian dictating the pace, Krauss needed to find a way to disrupt the Italian's rhythm. He came out with renewed aggression, hoping to force Petrosian into uncomfortable exchanges. Petrosian, ever calm, continued to use his superior footwork and timing to frustrate Krauss. Each time Krauss pressed forward, Petrosian danced just out of reach, performing these beautifully timed quarter circle slips to the side, again countering with precise strikes. Petrosian's complete command of range on full display. As the second round progressed, Petrosian kept finding these exquisite moments to launch his knee strikes. In one sequence, Petrosian launches a perfectly timed knee to Krauss's midsection. The moment Krauss tries to counter, Petrosian slips back out of range by mere millimeters, then hits with a jab-cross-jab, frustrating Krauss's own attempt to strike back. It was moment-by-moment gradual dissection of Krauss. But the crazy thing about Krauss is no matter how much damage he took, he kept coming in. Petrosian, of course, continued to punish Krauss with his jab-left-cross combination, followed by a hard rear roundhouse kick to Krauss's back leg, and occasionally targeting Krauss's front leg with a low kick, attempting to sap his strength and mobility. By this point in the fight, Petrosian had landed at least 9, by my count, back leg, hip flexor, roundhouse kicks, each one weakening Krauss's ability to press forward with full force. Towards the middle of the round, Krauss, who had started the round with aggression, began to falter. There were a couple of moments when Krauss started a kick only to abandon it halfway through, perhaps realizing that he'd missed his chance, or maybe he figured that it would likely be met with a punishing counter. And I don't know that much about fighting, but to me it seemed that if Krauss had only extended that kick just a little farther, like a question mark kick or Brazilian kick, it just might have connected. But something shut Krauss down. It was as if Petrosian had not only taken up residence in Krauss's mind, but had moved into every single room of a sprawling memory palace. If you listen to the audio, Krause's corner sounded increasingly desperate. And I don't understand Dutch, but their urgency was clear. Krause needed to find a way to turn the fight around. They were begging him to do something, anything, to break Petrosian's stranglehold on the fight. But almost without exception, each time Krause came forward, Petrosian met him with counters. The Armenian fighter's combinations were fluid and relentless. Jab, cross, back leg roundhouse kick, or a perfectly timed step-up knee as Krause tried to close the distance. There was a telling moment with 1 minute 23 seconds left in the round when Krause managed to land a beautiful right hook hitting Petrosian squarely in the face. Could Krause turn the tide? Well, immediately Petrosian responds with a right hook jab left hook combination, all landing flush on Krause's face. A clear reminder that even when Krause found success, Petrosian was ready to punish him for it. As the round drew to a close, every move Krause made, every attempt to somehow shift the momentum into his favor, was being met with a swift and punishing response. Krause was almost being conditioned to expect punishment for any attempt to attack. Here and there, Krause would manage solid hooks to the body, some of the few successful attacks that he made. But these moments were fleeting, overshadowed by the overwhelming number of strikes coming from Petrosian. Somehow, Krause's rhythm seemed predictable. He would attack, then he would pause, he would attack and pause, whereas Petrosian's was fluid. It was this ever-changing, constant barrage of attacks, dodges, and counters that kept Krause off balance. The round ended with a bell. Petrosian calmly walked back to his corner, barely seeming winded, while Krause was again breathing heavily, trying to regroup. This time it seemed opinions on the scorecard varied from judge to judge, but the overall sentiment echoed the first round. Petrosian was in control, and Krause was running out of time. As the third round began, Krause made a slight adjustment that briefly worked to his advantage. A Bob Ross kind of happy little accident. Around the 1 minute mark, Krause inadvertently switched to southpaw. He stepped in to throw a hook off his right hand, slipping into southpaw stance. But before he could switch back to orthodox, Krause was met with one of Petrosian's knees, and he raised his right leg to guard against it, again ending up in southpaw. Something about it seemed to be working, though. From this stance, Krause landed two solid hooks to the body, momentarily catching Petrosian off guard. This unexpected change in dynamic must have thrown Petrosian off, giving Krause an opportunity that he quickly exploited. And for one brief moment, it was Krause who was dictating the terms of the fight. But whether by habit or choice, after only a couple exchanges coming out on top, Krause reverted to orthodox, stepping this time with a left hook. And Petrosian was ready. He unleashed this powerful overhand left, this 180-degree, 11 o'clock to 5 o'clock hook that connected with Krause's face. And despite this brief window of success, all of Krause's efforts to press the advantage were again frustrating. But you have to give him credit where credit is due, because Krause never backed down. His relentless spirit was on full display for the world to see. And he continued to push forward, determined that no matter the cost, he was going to break through Petrosian's defenses. In the final moments of the round, with only 34 seconds left, Krause managed to briefly pin Petrosian on the ropes, landing a left-right hook combo followed by a high kick. Though the kick connected, it didn't have full impact as Petrosian partially slipped away. But you hear an audible gasp from the crowd as it reacts, sensing Krause's determination. But Petrosian would not let this go unanswered, and he hit back with his own flurry of punches, ending with, you guessed it, a high kick. When the final bell rang, Petrosian offered to touch gloves, but Krause raised his hands, seemingly confident that his efforts had won the round. Petrosian tilted his head questioningly, but walked back to his corner with his usual composure. The results were announced. All three judges scored the fight 30-29 in favor of Giorgio Petrosian. It was a close score, perhaps closer than many expected, but it confirmed what had been evident throughout the fight. Petrosian's control and precision had outmatched Krause's aggression. Perhaps it was the lingering resentment from his other decision losses that we talked about earlier, but Krause shook his head again in disbelief. In Krause's mind, his relentless pursuit and late-round efforts had warranted a different outcome. Yet, despite his disappointment, Krause did the sportsmanlike thing and congratulated Petrosian on his victory. As Petrosian walked back to his corner, the slight swelling on his left eye seemed a small price to pay for the win. Once again, Petrosian had demonstrated why he was the reigning K1 World Max champion, while Krause, despite his incredible heart and determination, was left to contend with the realization that he'd been outmaneuvered and outpaced by the doctor for a second year in a row. That's going to do it for this week's show. Hope you've been enjoying the series, The Doctor Calls, as we go over Giorgio Petrosian's amazing back-to-back wins at the K1 World Max Final in 2009 and 2010. We are, of course, going over the 2010 part of that series. And we'll be going into a fight, an exciting quarterfinal round between a fighter that I'm sure you all know and love, Gago Drago, as he faces off against Mohamed Kamal. Oh, and before I forget, we are going to be covering more of the details from our upcoming tournament in Brasilia that'll be held on August 24th. So hopefully you'll all tune in for that and hear some of the news that we have concerning that exciting development. And okay, that's really it now. Until next time, everyone, have a wonderful week. See you next time.